You're listening to podcasts from the Congressional Internet Caucus Advisory Committee, www.netcaucus.org.
I want to thank our generous hosts here at Morrison Forrester for providing this space for us today. As a small Capitol Hill organization, we are greatly indebted to our partners here in Silicon Valley. I'd like to acknowledge Professor Eric Goldman from Santa Clara University School of Law. The High Tech Law Institute has been immensely helpful to us in organizing these events. Stand in that West events are unique, and they're designed to help inform the technology policy discussions in Washington. By bringing together congressional members, Silicon Valley academic scholars, public interest advocates, and industry in an open town hall format, we hope to inform debates that go on in D.C. These are important technology issues, and we feel that interaction between these stakeholders can encourage better communication on these important topics. So this event series leads up to our annual State of the Net conference that we hold every year. It's the largest and most influential technology policy conference in the nation. It's held on Capitol Hill. This year's conference will be on January 22nd and 23rd, and registration opens on October 15th. So we want to hear from you as we work to build events like today and events in the future. We really want you to engage with us on our social media platforms, and we hope to keep the discussion going. And with that, I'd like to introduce Christopher Ide, Managing Partner for Morrison Forrester, for today's discussion. Thank you very much for coming.
Hello, my name is Chris Ide. I'm the Managing Partner here at Palo Alto. I'll keep my comments brief because I know none of you came to see me. But I did want to just quickly mention that MoFo and myself, I'm in the patent prosecution space, so I'm particularly in the internet and software area, so I'm sort of on the front lines here fighting some of these patent battles that you hear about and read about, as well as the firm itself. But I do want to give a special thanks to Congresswoman for helping bring the Patent Office to Silicon Valley. It's a huge thing. So thank you very much. I think it's going to be a great thing for the Silicon Valley and innovation and companies here. And so with that, I will hand it over to Congresswoman, and welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chris. Thank you, Chris, very much. Good morning, everyone. How are you? Everyone awake? Good. That's great. Thank you, Eric, for your introduction, and thank you to all of you for inviting me to the State of the Net West Conference. I think it was last year. We did it last year, but we weren't here. Where were we?
We were in
were we at Fenwick West?
Or Wilson?
At Wilson Sonsini. That's right. We were at Wilson Sonsini. So I'm delighted and to be here. Thank you for your good words about the real victory for us in our region in bringing a patent office to Silicon Valley. And we went at it in the first round. We lost out to Detroit, but we were bound and determined. I think sometimes when you lose the first round, you go for the knockout in the next one. So this is, after all, the innovation capital of our country. It makes all the sense in the world. And when you look and see where so many patents are generated, they certainly come out of the valley. So I think that this is going to be this is a real win for us. It's a very important win, and the delegation is really very proud of the work that we did. And the Silicon Valley Leadership Group also, I want to salute, because I always say I know what to do inside the institution and where the pressure points are, but you also need a real push from the outside. And they were invaluable with all of the businesses speaking out and being part of that organization. So I want to salute them. So it's good to be home and not have to commute every weekend. When I wake up in the morning, I know that I'm at home. You know, when you commute, before you open your eyes, you think, "Where am I? Am I in D.C. or am I at home in California?" So it's good to be here. I note that the conference is going to take place right after the inauguration. So get your inauguration tickets and then stay for the big conference. How's that?
Sounds good.
All right. I think that, when when I speak at gatherings, that one of the most common things that you see with the audience is that people have laptops, they have their smartphones, they have their tablets, and it really is a reflection of the insatiable appetite for wireless broadband. I think that most of you know that I'm the ranking member of the of a very important subcommittee, which is the Communications and Internet Subcommittee. That's kind of Washington talk, but what it means is that I'm the lead Democrat, and Congressman Greg Walden is the chairman of that very important subcommittee. So that's the first place where the table is set in terms of all telecommunications and internet issues for our country. And whatever legislation we consider and we write at that subcommittee then goes to the full committee and then to the full House. And likewise, in the Senate, it's the first time that I've ever served in a role like that. I really didn't go to Congress to be a chair of anything or a ranking member, but I have to say that I've enjoyed it. And I enjoy working with Greg Walden. In fact, he's going to be coming into the district, and we're going to be making some rounds this week and going out to different businesses and meeting with them and hear what they think we should be, you know, should be high priority in the next Congress. So I'm looking forward to that. But getting back to wireless broadband, last year alone, the U.S. mobile data traffic grew by almost 300%. Imagine that, by almost 300%, just last year alone. And with traffic estimated to grow an additional 16 times by 2016, we have to make freeing up more spectrum a top priority. And the subcommittee has been very, very, with a laser beam focus on this very subject. Recognizing that the looming spectrum crunch is very real, much of my work, as I just said, as ranking member of the subcommittee, has been focused on how to repurpose this scarce resource toward wireless broadband. When I talk about spectrum at other town hall meetings with a broader base of constituents, I always say, you know, you can't go to Nordstrom, you can't go to Neiman's, you can't go to Macy's to buy spectrum. It really is in the hands of the federal government. And when you repurpose or open up spectrum, the Congress really does not do this on a regular basis. This comes up at best maybe once in a decade or more. So what we do, when we do it, and how we do it is really very, very important. For almost 16 months, from the beginning of this Congress, the 112th Congress, for about 15 or 16 months, we worked to bring about bipartisan a spectrum legislation, and it was passed earlier this year. Is a very, very important accomplishment, I think, for the subcommittee. And, you know, these things take on a life of their own. It's like a roller coaster ride. One day you're on a high, everything's working out well. The next day there may be interests pulling on what you thought you got done yesterday, and you think it's going to unravel. And, of course, it's like a patent place, you know. It's not going to be done. It can't be done, and, you know, all of that. But I have a great sense of stick-to-itiveness, and I think because the chairman and I were able to work together very well, I was bound and determined that we would have bipartisan legislation and that it would really serve the country well. So it was not only an accomplishment for the subcommittee, most importantly, it's an accomplishment for the people of our country, and I think that consumers won in this as well. So the legislation included the following: a public safety network. What's important to understand about this particular subject is that the 9/11 Commission, which when the book came out, the publication, it amazed me. And I'm constantly moving through airports. And the one thing that I noticed amid all of the chaos of whatever airport I was in, whether it was SFO or Dulles, was that people were sitting and reading the 9/11 Commission's report to the nation. There was one recommendation of the 9/11 Commission that the Congress had not made good on, and it was this particular area. We all know that on that fateful day when our country was attacked, that police and fire in the same city could not communicate with each other. And I have often thought to myself, what would the outcome have been if they could have? But that question tortures you. And so I was bound and determined that we would address this last recommendation that had been left on the table unaddressed. So we finally delivered on our promise to our first responders to establish a nationwide interoperable public communications network. And I'm very, very proud of that. Also included in the legislation was Next Generation 911. Now, I've been working on 911 issues since the mid-90s. And I have to tell you, there was about as much interest in it as one of the dots in this carpet. But it really kind of rose to, it's like kind of the cream rising to the top when our country was attacked. And I think it was very much in front of the American people and therefore members of Congress, people using their cell phones to call their families, to say where they were and that they loved them and essentially say goodbye. But we have a system that really needed to be upgraded. So in the legislation, there's a next-gen 911 system which will enable first responders to receive photos, videos, and text messages, which can improve the quality and the speed of emergency response. And, you know, it's one of the backbones of our emergency systems in the country that people take for granted. But it had to be brought into the 21st century. So I'm very proud of that. We have a 911 caucus both in the House and the Senate. I was the founder in the House. In the Senate, it was Senator Clinton and Senator Burns. So that goes back a ways, but it's what we worked on for a long time, and we finally succeeded in getting that into the legislation. Very, very important area, unlicensed spectrum. In the first draft of the legislation that I'm talking about, unlicensed was not even included. And so I really pitched a campaign amongst committee members, Republicans and Democrats, so that they would understand what unlicensed represents, that it's a platform for innovation, and that the Congress really needed to lean in on this and expand it. It really supports the next generation of entrepreneurs and small businesses. It enables new applications and services like smart grid, medical patient monitoring, and broadband internet access to local schools, libraries, and other anchor institutions. And that was included in the legislation as well. And I think it's a real victory. It's always interesting to me what people know and what they don't know. And so you have to sometimes, it's all right for someone not to know. But it's up to, you know, the legislator that is pushing, in this case, unlicensed spectrum, to explain to members how unlicensed is working today. And I remember taking a huge chart into the hearing room, putting it in front of the committee, and saying, these are uses today of unlicensed, but we need to preserve and expand this so that there actually is a platform for innovation. In the legislation, we have incentive auction authority. and it's voluntary. This is the way we set it up this time. So the repurposing is on a voluntary basis, and broadcast television spectrum, there is obviously a growing demand for wireless broadband, and I think that not only the revenues that will come into the federal government, which are in the billions of dollars, and we had to work real well with the broadcasters. They were very nervous about what would happen. I had to keep reminding them that, you know, that our airwaves are owned by the American people, you know. Small, important side note, right, footnote. So now we're, where are we now? Right now, the agencies that are responsible for the different parts of the legislation of implementing them are implementing them, are setting them up. So these important provisions are now underway, and what I think we need to turn our attention to is to what is a faster, a more robust wireless broadband access, what it means for innovation, what it means for job creation, what it means for investment here and across the country, here in Silicon Valley, but also across the country, and whether there are any barriers that stand in the way of continued growth. So you no sooner achieve something that you have to move on and be ready for the next chapter. So this is going to require oversight of the committee in the next Congress, but also ideas on how we can build on what we did. Now, just shifting gears to take a snapshot of where we are again. Just 4 years ago, Apple's App Store contained only 500 third-party apps. Only 500. And at that time, we thought that was incredible, right? Today, there are over 500,000. Imagine that. I mean, that someone just gasped. You're right. You're right. And based on a study that was just released last week, the app economy has created 151,900 jobs right here in California. That's a lot of jobs. When you hear the job report nationally, I mean, imagine that, 151,900 jobs in California with an economic impact of more than $8 billion. These apps, as you know, they inform, they entertain, they make life easier for an awful lot of people. But no longer are mobile devices just a means for accessing email and basic news on the go. They now allow us to stream movies, to play online games, and to participate in video conferences and much, much more. So despite this growth, what I worry about are a growing set of threats that could curtail what's underway. As the FCC's open internet rules continue to be litigated, and they are constantly. Now, I know I'm here at Morrison & Foster, so I don't want to put a crimp in your business. But the fact of the matter is that the FCC no sooner will adopt a rule that it is litigated. And we've seen recent examples that test the spirit of the rules that the FCC adopted, including the blocking of some customers from using Apple's FaceTime video app over AT&T, over the AT&T network. Now, should the court overturn the FCC's rules, and I believe that the FCC has the authority in this area, and I thought that it belongs under Title II and still maintain that, I would act quickly to introduce legislation clarifying the commission's authority to ensure that there's a free and open internet. Prevent the use of internet fast lanes or other discriminatory rules. I feel very strongly about that. What also looks very different is today's video marketplace. Very different than the one that led Congress to pass the 1992 Cable Act. That's the year that I was elected to Congress, so I didn't participate in that. But I certainly followed it because there were many constituents that were interested in it when I was campaigning. Now, this has led many to ask whether changes in the way people use video, particularly online, requires a congressional update. Clearly, consumers want the freedom and the flexibility to stream video content wherever and whenever they want and wherever they are. Yet the rules preventing incumbent cable operators from withholding affiliated content from competitors never anticipated online-based services like Xfinity, Stream, Pix, or Hulu Plus. So while we should be, cautious not to enact rules that could curtail investment in these innovative services, their affiliation with incumbent providers shouldn't be used to lock out competitors. And I think that that's very, very important. You can tell that in the forefront of my thinking is always consumers. Third is the use of discriminatory data caps and their potential to impact the growing streaming video market. Earlier this summer, it was widely reported that the DOJ, the Department of Justice, had begun looking into whether data caps unfairly limit online competition. And while we don't know the extent of this inquiry, it will fall on my subcommittee to thoroughly examine the issue and to ensure that future innovation is not curtailed. So you can tell that there's not a moment's rest at the committee. The issues that we deal with really move at lightning speed, and you really have to be limber and on your toes to not only in anticipation but to understand what's happening, to examine it very, very thoroughly, to establish a broader understanding of all of the members on both sides of the aisle, and then move in a very prudent way. Finally, there's the importance of data roaming rules that promote competition and the seamless availability of wireless services that consumers have come to expect. These rules are particularly important for smaller wireless carriers who often have very little choice for roaming partners other than their largest rivals. Last month, there were oral arguments that were heard in a case challenging the FCC's data roaming rules. I've consistently advocated for the commission, the FCC, to take action in this area, and I'll continue to do so in order to ensure a competitive wireless marketplace. The FCC has been very slow in this area, and I have to tell you, it pleased me when I got some of my colleagues to sign on to what we call a dear colleague, except it's to an agency, each one is considered has a very good reputation on the committee. They know of what they speak. They've had experience with it, not only in their own district, but see it as a national issue. And we urge the FCC to take this on. And after silence and non-action for a long time, wouldn't you know, there was some movement. So we'll stay on this. I'm really proud of the subcommittee's accomplishments in this Congress. I don't have to remind any audience that that the Congress is held in very low esteem. Many constituents ask, what is it like to work in a place where the the overall approval rating is about 9%? And my response always is, I didn't think we had that many relatives. From the beginning of the Congress, I expressed to the chairman, to the subcommittee chairman, Greg Walden, that that I thought that we had the opportunity to accomplish something on a bipartisan basis and do something that would stand out, make a contribution, expand our economy, increase competition, produce something for the consumers of the country, and that we would be unlike so many other parts of the Congress. And that's where my pride springs from. And I certainly didn't do this by myself. I'm not suggesting that. But I went into it with that attitude, and I'm proud of what the subcommittee has been able to do. So in addition to what I've already highlighted this morning, I expect that in the next Congress, regardless of the composition of the Congress and how the American people express themselves in just a handful of weeks, I think that there's a need for a continuing emphasis on how federal agencies can more efficiently use their spectrum. Now, this is an area that hasn't been examined for a long time, and I think perhaps one of the reasons that Congress didn't get into it is because the DOD is a huge holder and user of spectrum, and that is considered almost sacred ground and that you should not tread on that ground. I've been pleasantly surprised by the cooperation of not only the DOD but other agencies as well. So this is not a got you and we're going to put you in a box and we're going to take away your family jewels. We're all in this together. And so that examination is very, very important, and it's underway right now, but by no means is the work completed. But I am hopeful because there's a healthy attitude on the part of the stakeholders. This is all about reallocation and sharing. There has to be vigorous oversight to ensure, as I said, the successful implementation of the what is the law now. We also have another challenge, and that's Congress did not pass cyber security legislation, so that is that's up to the new Congress. I don't know how many of you saw 60 Minutes on Sunday, but there was one segment was an examination of the telecommunications, the Chinese telecommunications giant Huawei, and one of the objections that I had of the cyber bill that was offered in the House is that it really never dealt with the integrity of the chain and what happens with all of that. That was something that simply was not in the legislation, and I think that that was very important. And I mentioned Chinese telecommunications company because that is the very question that was raised. Now, I spent almost a decade on the House Intelligence Committee, so I know these issues pretty well and what the challenges are. So I also think that the subcommittee is going to have to obviously reauthorize the Satellite Television Extension and Localism Act because that expires a year from now, in December, a year from now. So really throughout these efforts, I think that you have a strong sense that I've, my focus has been on being a champion for policies that advance innovation. I mean, we just cannot rest on our oars. Hi, Jerry. Thought you would just sneak in, right? To advance innovation, there has to be strong competition. That's really in our DNA, I think. But it's always through the eyes of the beholder of what constitutes competition. And we want to ensure that there's a vibrant sector that benefits consumers for many years to come. So, these things become delicate balancing acts. But nonetheless, that's our charge. And for anyone that thinks that the Congress is unimportant, is irrelevant. You've gotten a taste of the weightiness of all of these issues, and telecommunications represents at least 1/6 of our national economy and continues to grow. And so there are enormous opportunities here for our future. I have no doubt that my congressional district is helping to lead the way. So it's wonderful to be with you, and it's good that the papers fell because I'm done with them. So thank you again, and I want to thank the caucus and its leadership, and I'm pleased to be a part of that leadership, but all the members that are part of it and the ongoing work that's done by the caucus. It's very important. It's bipartisan. It is bicameral, and you can see the fruit of its work. So thank you. You're a very attentive audience. So I'd be happy to take questions. And again, thank you to Morrison and Foster for hosting us. And that I didn't have to travel that far to get to you. Nothing is that far in my district, though. So it's fairly compact. Yes?
Yeah, can I ask you about the ITU and the WICCAT process?
Yes, yes.
I'd like to hear more.
I think that you all know what that is, and that there will be a conference in Dubai in December, and we have on a bipartisan basis, bicameral, as well as the executive branch, believe it or not, there is not an inch of daylight between us. There is agreement, and there needs to be agreement across the board, strong agreement across the board, that our view and that of other countries is that we not segment the internet, and that the model that has helped it to flourish remain in place. Now there are countries that don't hold that view, and it's very interesting when you look at the list of countries that don't hold that view. They're not open societies, and so their tendency, obviously, and their choice is to control. And so at the committee, we started out. Mary Bono was a wonderful leader in this. What we did was to bring forward a resolution from the committee. It was unanimous, obviously bipartisan to be unanimous. And then we moved that to the floor of the House. We spoke on it on the floor of the House. And we have a very able Ambassador Kramer, that will lead the delegation. Commissioner McDowell from the FCC has been an eloquent spokesman on this particular issue, and has been highly instructive, I think, to our committee, to the full committee, Energy and Commerce, as well as our subcommittee, and to the general public, because he's interviewed and he speaks of this, and he knows of what he speaks. So, happily, we have total unanimity in this, and we're going to have to attract, our delegation is going to have to attract the minds of other countries, and work hard at making sure that what is in place today, that open stakeholder approach and all of that, that is retained. But there are many concerns swimming around it. I'm not in a position to forecast what the outcome is going to be, but you can tell where we want it to go. So thanks for raising it. I thought of that when I was speaking. I thought, I'm not mentioning anything about that, but maybe someone will ask, and you did. That's great. It's unusual to have that kind of unanimity. You know that. Yeah.
First of all, thank you on your work on that issue. It's one that I find very difficult to understand. And so being an outsider, I don't really understand who's doing what and why, and so having experts on the ground paying attention to it makes me feel better.
Yeah, no, we'll have a very, very strong delegation, and I have something coming up. We've been setting up appointments to speak, telephone time and all of that with Ambassador Kramer, and his schedule keeps changing, mine keeps changing, but I think it's very important that experts from the private sector be very much a part of this as well, because they can be highly instructive, not only to him, but to the delegation. Is the delegation named, David?
I have not seen the list, but if it hasn't come out yet, it should be any day now.
This is David Grossman, our in-house expert in my office. How's that?
So can we
speak with David? He'll give you a great deal of confidence about what I'm doing.
Can we go back to cybersecurity for just a moment?
Sure.
What's your assessment of the executive branch trying to implement cybersecurity initiatives on their own, given that Congress didn't act?
Well, I think that, you know, there are some things that can be done by executive order. But there are other issues that that they don't have the authority to, you know, to implement. I mean, I've listened to what Secretary Napolitano has been saying about an executive order, and that it's almost ready, and that it may address protections for vital infrastructure systems and. Outline, you know, voluntary standards for private companies, and you know, I look forward to viewing that, but taking a look at it. But there are other issues that, as I said, that can't be addressed by an executive order, funding and liability protections. Those issues have to be dealt with by the legislative branch. So. As I said, you know, supply chain integrity, information sharing, those were issues that were not contained in this. And, you know, while I think that there was a lot of disappointment that this issue didn't mature in this Congress, I'd rather see the effort, I shouldn't say fail, but, you know, that it wasn't addressed. But it be brought back, and that it really be an even better bill, because you're dealing with huge, huge issues in this area, and we've got to get it right. And, you know, I mean, the American people feel very, very strongly about privacy, and so it's a very, very delicate balancing act. It really is, and there are suspicions. On the part of the citizenry about, you know, what information the government holds, how it would be used, telecommunications and as a tool, and what they collect and how people are protected. I mean, there are enough issues to keep you and your lectures and your writing for the rest of your life, just embedded in this issue. But when you think of an executive order, yes, some things can be covered, and I think that the administration may be coming out with something. It seems to me, anyway, because the secretary has been referencing it, but keep in mind that Congress, as I said, you know, it would be in the hands of the Congress to address liability and the funding. So we'll see.
Is
yes.
Congress done with patent reform now that the AIA is in place? And
oh boy. This is I'm sure you all read the New York Times piece. It's quite an article. You can tell how important it is. It was one of the hot items that pings on my BlackBerry, that you know, the story that was coming up, so I read it the night before. I think that we had a terrific patent bill under the leadership of Howard Berman. And it was bipartisan. It was, I think, in really a delicately and beautifully balanced bill. He spent time here in Silicon Valley to learn firsthand what the needs and the concerns were. It was upended in the Senate, as you know, in the previous Congress. The pharmaceutical industry didn't like it, and they have, you know, considerable lobby. I didn't vote for this patent bill in this Congress. I thought it was a bad bill for many reasons. So, so your question was what? Is it going to stand?
Oh, are you done, or are we going to see patent reform part two soon?
Well, it's hard for me to tell. It's hard for me to tell. I think that it depends. One of the things that that could bring about a further readdress of the area is if there's a change in the composition of the Congress, because there are different views held on this. Congress doesn't have much of a stomach, most frankly, and this is my 20th year, I can't believe it, to revisit it, a major issue once it has, it thinks it has dealt with it. And they say, we've done that. We know that it's less than perfect. That's the mark of human beings. We're not perfect. Legislation isn't. And we've got other things that we need to take on. So I'm not so sure that a new Congress is ready to go at this again. But we'll see. We'll see.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Can I just piggyback on that for a moment?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. On November 16th, we're going to have a conference at Santa Clara University on software patents. So if you're interested, please contact me or Doris. We're going to talk about other solutions in addition to legislation about things that might be done to address problems with software patents. Sorry to make
No, that's all right.
Field.
They need to get your ads in here.
What are your thoughts on where we are in terms of STEM education these days and what else needs to be done?
Well, the question is, where are we on STEM education? Now it's some years ago that I had the idea, and I took it to our leadership at that time, that that essentially an innovation agenda needed to be developed for our country, because we're falling back in so many key areas. And so we launched that effort, and we launched it right here at Stanford University. I asked John Hennessy if he would host it, and he said, I can't think of a more important thing for us to be working on. Now, that, the composition of that was not a lot of members of Congress talking and sucking up all the air in the room, but rather to bring in the key stakeholders in the private sector to hear what they thought needed to be addressed. And both from the telecommunications sector, the venture capital sector, educational institutions, obviously being hosted at Stanford University, biotechnology, high technology. And then that was taken because it was really such a an incredibly instructive gathering and meeting that the leader at that time thought that that we should hear from people from across the country. So they went to the Northeast, to MIT, to Princeton, to the Northwest, to the Southwest, to the Midwest, and so out of all of that, we put that together. Now, we had we passed the policy, and then when the Democrats were in control for that short period of time, we funded it. And STEM education is taking me a long time to get to the point, but I want you to know how that came about. STEM was one of the major planks of the innovation agenda. So it called for 100,000 new teachers in science and technology and energy and engineering and that. But, you know, it reminds me of another effort that took some time, and that was to double the funding for the National Institutes of Health. Once Congress did that, and it was a huge, huge effort, you know, to get there. It was a steep hill to climb, but we did it, and we did it on a bipartisan basis. And Congress becomes self-satisfied. You know, we've been there, we've done that, and then with that kind of attitude, if you don't keep it up, if you don't keep up the incremental funding and the adjustments that need to be made, then you end up going flat or even moving backward. So while we were successful at launching that and accomplishing it, I think the Congress has become self-satisfied that this is an area that we already dealt with it and it's okay. It's not. This is where we have to keep the pedal to the metal every single day. And we're in a time for a frame now where in the national campaign is to just cut. We have to do it right now. We have to, you know, the sky is falling. We're going to become grease if we don't cut. On that issue, most frankly, the Congress has to come up with a long-term plan. If it were easy to eradicate the deficit and move toward a balanced budget, believe me, if the low-hanging fruit would have been, you know, picked and done by now. So this is a very long answer in a broader context. We have to be willing to make these investments. We have to be willing to make these investments. And I do think that it is the role of the Congress to make these investments. Private sector is not going to do this all on its own. It has to be a partnership, most definitely. But the emphasis on muscle and brawn versus the brain and the training and the education, when you look at our stiffest competitors, they're making massive investments in these areas. Massive investments. So we're not going to be, historians will not, I'm convinced, historians will not write that the 21st century is an American century unless STEM is invested in over and over and over. This is not a one-time deal. This is consistent. This has to be in every budget, whether it's a Republican president or a Democratic president, regardless of who is in the leadership of the Congress, must be a top priority for all of us. Otherwise, we will slip and slip and slip. And I'm preaching to the choir here, so I don't want to go into what that picture looks like.
Thank you
for asking about it. Yes.
Can you comment on the divide between Hollywood and Silicon Valley and the recent HIPAA fiasco? Do you think D.C. or Congress can help?
Well, something that some think we got in the way and others celebrate what we did. I've really not seen an effort in all the years that I've been in Congress where something... where a piece of legislation was moving so rapidly, I mean, it was on the, it was a fast track. It was just moving. There wasn't any question, I don't think, in anyone's mind that this thing was just going to go. It was going to be passed and sent to the president. And then it flipped. And co-sponsors ran away with their hair on fire. I mean, it was really something. It was really something to watch in a very short period of time. Now, this is not an area... I know that description makes us all kind of smile and laugh out loud and whatever, but this, it's serious. This is very serious. it needs to be addressed. I mean, piracy is simply not something that is defensible. This costs billions and billions of dollars to our own economy, and beyond that, it's the hijacking of American genius and creativity. So while a lot of reporters, and there was a lot of press, obviously, on this, a lot of reporters called me because, obviously, you know, the district that I represent, and was this a victory for Silicon Valley over Hollywood and North versus South, we have to get to a place where both win. We have to get to a place where both win. And because we can't be without the genius and the innovation of Silicon Valley, which has become, in so many ways, a partner and a platform for what the creative geniuses in Southern California and what they produce. And that's really, it's an imprimatur of our culture, too, around the world. I mean, when you hear people who have come to our country and talk about what influenced them, what shaped their thinking about our nation, what made it so attractive to them, it was Hollywood. It was Hollywood and the films that they saw, the expressions that that were carried by that industry. So while it was a short-term victory to kill what I thought was a very bad bill, and believe me, I was right there and under that effort. we have to get to a place where there is agreement. And I think that there are, you know, after the dust settled and people feel wounded and insulted and victorious, you know, all of that, all of the human emotions, that cooler heads prevail, and that that people are talking to each other, and that that in the next Congress that we go at it. Look, patents, copyright, all of that are the foundation on which a democracy builds its innovation and its creativity. And again, piracy is the hijacking of American genius, and that's not an enviable position for us to be in. So, kind of a long answer, but thank you for asking it. Yes?
I'm Richard Bennett with ITIF. Uh-huh. I started working in Washington on public policy issues about 4 years ago after doing engineering here in Silicon Valley mm-hmm. for 30-something years. And the two biggest issues that I've run into since I've been doing that were net neutrality and SOPA.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of net neutrality, it's sort of Silicon Valley disapproving of the way that infrastructure providers manage their networks or want to manage their networks.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of SOPA, it was Silicon Valley disapproving of the way that Hollywood wants to manage its creative product.
Mm-hmm.
And so Silicon Valley has this antagonistic relationship with the infrastructure on which the Internet depends. And they also have this antagonistic relationship now with Hollywood with respect to the content that ultimately flows over that communications infrastructure. Does Silicon Valley need to learn how to be a team player and get along with the other elements of the ecosystem on which it really depends?
Well, I think you make a very interesting observation. But I think that we're living in a world now where because innovation, I mean, think about Moore's Law, where innovation is moving at the speed of lightning. And so where there has been collaboration and things have worked out in one setting, all of a sudden there's a new wrinkle, so to speak. And so it really calls for people to keep renewing themselves, their views, and where they collaborate one day, they may be clashing the next, all right? But I mean, we see right here in the valley where they may be, you know, suing the hell out of each other. And then tomorrow you're going to read in the newspaper where they're partners and collaborating on a new app or a new whatever. So, you know, it's ever changing. It always depends on, I mean, in the Congress, which moves, obviously, doesn't move at the speed of lightning, but nothing happens unless there are people that are willing to collaborate with one another. So, you know, the flip side of that is that we can't afford to have anyone pick up their marbles and go home. I mean, it just doesn't work. It doesn't work. That's an old paradigm, you know, where some giant can just stamp out the ant, you know. Now, that does happen in some instances because there are, you know, huge interests involved. But that's not a... it's not a winning approach. It's not 21st century thinking. You have to work. If there's anything that marks this era for our country, it's politics, and it's, I think, and it's, as well as what goes on in the country, is our ability to problem solve. So no one is suggesting that these are easy issues to work out, you know. But I think that the old paradigms are gone. They're not going to come back. They don't. They just don't fit with our time. We're in a different era, and people have to look to work together collaboratively. And you know what? You don't get everything you want. I don't. You don't. None of you do. And neither will... you know, whatever the commercial interests are, and others. So that's it's a broad answer, but it's based more on my observations of where we are and how quickly things move, and there has to be collaboration. There just has to be.
So
you know, and in the end, there's you can really create some wins.
So this graduated response system that the ISPs and Hollywood are working on together would be an example of that kind of collaboration?
I think so. Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's not up to me to tell them what they sit down and talk about at the table. But we all know, you know, what the 10,000-pound gorilla is in the middle of the room. So, now, it was a high-stakes game in the Congress. It was fascinating. I mean, it was fascinating. It really was. And it was just like that, you know? Mm-hmm. I kind of enjoyed it, yeah.
You mentioned the satellite reauthorization bill mm-hmm. and some other video issues that the subcommittee will be taking a look at.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see that sort of moving forward in tandem, or are those two sort of totally separate?
Well, I hope we can walk and chew gum at the same time, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, there are some people that are asking, should the... you know, should the Telecommunications Act be reopened and whatever? I mean, you really have to, I think, really think these things through. But do I think that we can handle more than one thing? Yes. Yeah. And I don't think there's any reason the acronym, STELA or STELA. For that to expire, you know. I mean, that's the work of the Congress. That's what it was to their job.
More I was trying to get at would STELA or whatever the new reauthorization bill be called, that has sort of a history of at least having the potential for being a type of Christmas tree kind of bill or other
everything. Everything has the opportunity.
Because it sort of has to happen, right? So do the other video issues kind of end up happening along with that, or do you think they remain on their own track?
Well, I think, you know, we haven't begun it yet.
Yeah.
So it's difficult for me to sketch out what it looks like, what key members may want to address in it. That's why we have a fairly long process. I mean, we have hearings. Hearings are very important. You learn a lot in a hearing. And there are so many stakeholders that are that come in and advise us. And as ranking member, I've made sure that key witnesses from businesses that would be affected here in Silicon Valley. While I can't name the majority of the witnesses, I have the as ranking member, I can call in specific witnesses, and that's very, very important. So once that starts, and then you hear the questions that members are asking, and what's emerging, and what how we're advised, and what comes out in those hearings, it becomes very much a part of the collective thinking of the subcommittee and what it's going to draw up. And, of course, there are many interests that come in and say, this is a very good opportunity to address fill-in-the-blank. So it depends on, you know, who the chair is, who the chairman is, chairman or chairwoman, how's that? So we'll see. But I think it's just too early to tell. Anything else? Yes?
There are many people now who have started to use the Internet to share things. So it's called the sharing economy or collaborative consumption or the clean web. And now, because this use of the Internet bumps into, it impacts the real world, the physical world, where people exchange things, this often bumps into many rules that were written when that mm-hmm. this ability was not there, this possibility was not there. So I wonder what Congress is doing, if that's a priority of Congress to look at this space. What's your view?
Well, again, I think that, where this fits, is there an opportunity for legislation that we haven't taken up but is left to the new Congress? Would something like this fit into that so that, you do a fix in a certain area? There are a whole variety of opportunities for us to do that. It's whether, again, it's very dependent on the leadership of the committee and whether they think that that this is important enough that that you carve out time in order to address it. But again, it's kind of hard for me to tell with any specificity to say to you, yes, definitely, this is going to be taken up. We have issues left over from this Congress relative to spectrum. I mean, it's a huge thing to take on the federal government itself in terms of being a user and a holder of spectrum. Do I think there's the opportunity to do this? Absolutely. Can I promise you that the Congress is going to do it? I can't, because we just don't know right now. Where this becomes important is if there are coalitions of various providers and or consumers that come in and say to committee members, this is a major area that has some real holes in it or real challenges in it that we think you need to address. Yeah, believe it or not, everything doesn't emanate from proactively from members of Congress. So, we're sensitive about that. I mean, Jerry Yanowitz is here from the representing California Cable. He's not shy about coming in and expressing, what they need and why it'll be good for consumers and for cable and communities, or whatever it is. So, it works both ways. It works both ways. Now, one of the FCC commissioners is going to be here this week, Commissioner Clyburn. I've had other FCC commissioners that have come to the district, and we always set up an itinerary to go to small companies, medium-sized companies, large companies, the stakeholders, so that they can tell the commissioner where they are, what they think they need, what's in the way, and I'm right there listening and, you know, drinking that in as well. So it's a two-way street. It's a two-way street. Did I put you to sleep? Are you just wowed? You can tell that it's I love this subcommittee. And I've been on this subcommittee since being appointed to Energy and Commerce at the end of my first term. So I've been on, it was telecommunications, now it's communications and the internet. But I very purposefully made a bid for this subcommittee, understanding how much its jurisdictions affected my congressional district. Plus, I think it's absolutely fascinating. There's not a dull moment. And I thank you. There are so many in this room that have been instructive to me in my work, and I ask you to continue to do that, because that's how all of this works, and it helps to keep me on my toes and reminds me of the vibrancy of this place here, where we are, this very special place. Yes, Morriston and Foster, but in right here in Silicon Valley. So thank you, and I look forward to coming back, and who knows what we're going to be talking about next year, right? That's the interesting part of this. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Great. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for briefing.